Welcome to Go Home Heat, an impactful podcast. This is me, KP, and I will be running you through a special event that I wasn't even sure I would talk about, but I thought the main event was amazing, and I thought a couple of interesting things happened throughout it that had a little bit to do with another little company and a possible belt collector on a bus. We find out early on in this Impact special event called Final Resolution, the last Impact Plus, $7.99 a month weekend show that is just wrestling. I wouldn't call it a pay-per-view because it's really not. Impact Plus gives you all this. It's the WWE Network, but different. And it gives you access to their catalog along with these special events that they do every now and then. Now, pretty early on, they show us Kenny Omega's tour bus pulling into the yard, or the parking lot, as one would say, out front, which is a huge deal. I did not think that they were going to have him there. It looks as if, an interesting thing to me is that Kenny was, in multiple people in AEW have been wrestling in other organizations other than AEW. Kenny was a AAA champion not that long ago. So it is interesting that he's moving over, because this is not a company considered, I don't know, a lot of people consider indie, but it is a company that people thought wouldn't be in an umbrella of cross promotions, which we've talked about ad nauseum. The wrestling world has talked about ad nauseum for 2 weeks now. But tonight was interesting, and we'll get to why. Now, the first match is a Tommy Dreamer match. Larry D, if you are new to Impact or you didn't bother to watch this, I'm going to try to roll through this quickly and give you an example of what this company is. Also, what I thought was interesting about this particular pay-per-view and where this all could possibly be leading. What this company is wild when it comes to certain things. Larry D is in a wrestling match with Tommy Dreamer to decide whether or not he will get arrested for shooting Johnny Bravo. That's the stip. You lose, you go to have a trial in court. This is a Tommy Dreamer match. If you are new to the term Tommy Dreamer match, that means it's an ECW match. Everything goes. We start out with cookie sheets, chopsticks, cardboard boxes, chairs, and a huge junkyard dog style chain. And all of these are used. Dreamer does a lot of biting. I don't like Dreamer selling the quivers when he hits the ground after he's been hit in the head, because I always wonder when Tommy's last bump is coming. And so when he starts to quiver like that, just for a second, I'm unable to focus, and I'm like, oh, I hope he's not really hurt, and that's not fun. But anyway, going on, Dreamer seems to like this, so that's a go-to for him when he's on the ground. Larry D pulls off the old weight belt and slaps him around with it. The Dreamer reverses it, gets the slaps back. We get a Dreamer cutter for a two count. Larry counters with a slam on the chair. Larry winds up in a tree of woe, and that winds up with a chair on his face. Dreamer with a classic style Dreamer move where he double kicks the chair into Dreamer's into Larry D's face. Could have gotten the cover here. Chose not to. He goes for a table. As he's getting that, tag team partner in Triple X, AC Romero, comes out. We get an attack. Then Bravo, who, as we know, now Bravo was in a coma 2 weeks ago from a shooting 4 weeks ago. But he rushes to the ring and gets into fisticuffs here. Evidently, surgery has gone well for him. And he attacks. He tries a double clothesline on about 700 pounds worth of people here to no effect, surprisingly. He gets squished between the two, considering he just got shot with a bullet in the chest. This seems like a really bad thing for him to have to deal with. But he does seem to roll away and get out of the ring injured but alive. Just enough of a distraction for Dreamer to hit the old school DDT into 1-2-3, and Larry D is headed to jail. He's put in handcuffs as AC screams no when Johnny Bravo was shot. The lights came on and Dreamer was on hands and knees screaming no. When Dreamer got dropped last week by Larry D, Johnny Bravo was on hands and knees exclaiming no. And here we are as his tag team partner is being carted away to go to jail with AC screaming no. So we've come full circle here on this. Now, if you don't know, the reason for Larry D shooting Johnny Bravo, if he actually did, which we assume he did because he just got arrested for it by losing a match, it was because Rosemary had put a spell on Larry D, causing him to fall in love with her in order to make Johnny Bravo jealous so that she could marry him and murder his virginous self and use him as a sacrifice to the Hive. So when we talk about Impact being a lot, this is Impact being a lot. Headed to Kenny Omega's bus in the parking lot, we knock on a door, nobody answers. C-Stars versus Havoc is next. This was not great. The C-Stars are going to need a lot of work. They have a nice little code breaker senton combo that did not work for a pin. Havoc winds up holding one of the two C-Stars at an angle while they get a cutter pin, which was a neat little combo move for them. I am clueless as to how this wound up being as long as it was. And I get that the C-Stars need work, but it was fine. It's just, it really didn't need to have this much back and forth because, anyway, I'll move on because I don't want to be too caught up in that. Kiera Hogan and Tasha Steelz are backstage and they don't know what to do with the money that they have stolen. Okay, they are the officials. Kiera Hogan is the official. Tasha Steelz is the ring announcer for a match between Hernandez, who had his money stolen by Fala Ba, who was utilizing that money in order to pay for Johnny Bravo's wedding. But then when he decided not to do it and to keep the money, Steelz and Hogan stole the money from him. So now they are holding the money to give to the winner of the match and officiating the match and being the ring announcer and the person who is the timekeeper. Like I said, Impact can be a great deal.
Yeah.
And it is quite odd that Hernandez is in a match in which he is trying to win back the money that was stolen from him. But that's how wrestling works here. Okay, Tasha, pardon me, Tenille Dashwood, Caleb Kay versus Eddie Edwards and Alicia Edwards. Alicia Edwards. Caleb, this is not much either. Like I said, I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. Caleb and Tenille do a lot of cheating. Eddie winds up getting upset because they are doing these things. They're grabbing his leg. They're grabbing Alicia's legs. He winds up jumping into the ring because Eddie's always a hothead, and that causes Alicia to get beat up more because, of course, this enables double teams and such. That's the way wrestling works. Multiple comedy spots. We wind up with things getting kind of crazy. Eddie does a suicide dive out of the ring, lands on Caleb with a K, and then he asks for Alicia to jump off the top rope onto the both of them. As she gets up to the top of the corner, the lights go out. Sammy Callahan's, who's been feuding with Eddie's insignia, goes up on the board. He doesn't immediately get involved, which gives Tenille time on the distraction to pull Alicia down, which turns into her getting the pinfall. And then, of course, as Eddie is covering Alicia, trying to make sure that the fight doesn't wind up going after the bell is over, that is when Sammy attacks with a baseball bat, hits the package pile driver on Eddie, and we are back into a program with Eddie Edwards. And this whole thing was to get us back into a program with Eddie Edwards, Sammy Callahan. So I don't know. I like both those guys. They work pretty stiff. Having Crazy Ken in the middle of all that, Shamrock, is going to be fun. So it's okay. It's just, again, we've gone two matches that weren't great matches, but they were telling stories. And we'll be continuing this throughout the evening. Interview segment, Don Callis leaves. Don Callis walks out of the bus to discuss what's Gia interrupting his family time. He says, no way will Kenny be involved in any of Final Resolution. I will not allow for that. Don't interrupt my family time again. These lights are intrusive on us as we're trying to enjoy ourselves. So that's that. He won't be interrupting any of this evening, says the great Don Callis. Tasha Steelz intros Kiera Hogan as guest referee. Then she introduces Hernandez, who, as she puts it, is straight from the barbecue and believes he's cool because he wears Chucks, versus Fala Ba, who she says thinks he's a panda bear, which is fairly true. The stealers of the money are the referees, as we have said, and we have ourselves a hoss fight. Hernandez does a slingshot shoulder block and drop kick, along with an over-the-top rope on Fala Ba. These are the big spots of the match so far, early in the match. And boy, it reminded me that there was a time when Hernandez was something to see, boy. When LAX was first coming along, he was an amazing performer, and it is a shame that more people don't know how great he was. Now, if you go to Impact Plus, you can see those matches. I mean, they don't pay me, but I'm just telling you, the history of Impact has great matches, and he is involved in a ton of them with LAX. And, okay, let's get back to what's going on here. Now, Fala Ba does his thing. He's a pretty athletic guy to be somewhere around 400 pounds, which is contradictory in and of itself. He gets a near fall, but he actually has it. He thinks he's got it won as Hernandez is trying to pull him over into some form of a sunset flip, and he just sits down on top of Hernandez, and Kiera does the one count, and then she does a booty shake, a two count, and a booty shake. And, of course, he kicks out before she even starts the three count. She was basically dancing between Quake. Maybe a Quake. It might have been a Quake. I'm not real good on what that was. But it was some form of movement quickly with her hind end right there. As her buddy was doing the same thing outside of the ring. Which infuriates Fala Ba because he's got money on the line here. Opening the door up for Hernandez to get the win on a splash. After a month, he has won his money back. He is very happy. And then things get real weird because after the loss, Steelz is supposed to get back, Tasha Steelz is supposed to get back that money to Hernandez, and it is no longer in her fanny pack. She doesn't seem to know where it is. And Hernandez reaches into both knee pads and pulls out things that look oddly like the things that barbers use to shave your face. Terrifying. The girls run away, as well they should. I'm hoping that I saw that completely wrong, because I would hope that that is not what he had. But it looked kind of like that. But hopefully they were just some form of stick. And I still don't think he should use sticks on him either. But he is furious because he's not getting his money back that he rightfully owned in the first place and was stolen and then won back. Again, this show can be a great deal. Eric Young versus Rhino. We wind up with it's Rhino, guys, in a match at this point in his career. It's a plotting match. Joe Doering's outside. There are some pretty good spots. EY's a pretty good storyteller. Rhino can kind of sort of still do what he has to do to make things good. Here's what was important. Doring gets slapped by Rhino, which allows EY to get a super kick. There is a spot in the match where the referee gets hit. When the referee goes down, EY is able to retaliate, as I apologize, with the super kick, and then he goes for the mask. The mask is loaded. He's been hitting people with it and knocking them out. Cody Deaner, who had wrestled EY earlier in the week, and he's been on this 2-week thing where EY was running up and down the roads with him and then trained him, comes out. And Cody, we all know, is going to save Rhino. His cousin Jake is with him. Cody yanks the mask out of EY's hand, and we believe that this is going to put an end to the shenanigans. Instead, he hits Jake, his cousin, with the mask, allows EY to take the mask back, and screams, "I'm not a nobody," and storms off. EY uses the mask, gets the cover, 1, 2, 3. What's most interesting about all of this is all of a sudden EY is forming a faction with Jake Deaner in that. Jake is a smaller guy. He could use being a heel. He was somewhat of a tweener anyway. They were beer drinkers, Hellraiser kind of characters anyway. But they were doing a lot of comedy spots. Now, the interesting thing is, I have always thought that Jake is a big, coordinated wrestler. And him being freed from being in a tag team, that is somewhat of comedic relief on this show, could really mean big things for him. And it's a neat angle to have the guy that's probably not the guy with the highest potential sliding into the more important thing, freeing up Jake to become whatever he can become. And so he'll go into a feud with Cody. Doesn't matter if he wins or loses, because Cody's going to wind up having help with EY and Doring. And Eric Young, we know, can be the head of a faction, and we know he's imposing. This is good for the company. Although the match wasn't great, again, we get a great story here leading into these episodes coming up. Now, the interesting thing from the world of wrestling, and I had not thought about it correctly until later, but the good brother Carl Anderson goes for the bus, and the bodyguard guy that watches the door that gives you access to the bus says, "No, you can't go in there unless you're on my list. I don't see you." Scott D'Amore says, "Hey, he's probably on that list, and you're going to have to get better figuring out who can come and go over here, because Carl Anderson is pretty good friends with Kenny Omega." Sure enough, Machine Gun is on the list and allowed to go to the bus. So as he walks to the bus, there is mischief in the air, and we get our last Rohit challenge for the X Division title. Rohit comes out and tells us how great he has been in this year and how he can't wait to go into next year. And instead of Suicide this time, Manic comes out. And as we know, TJP is not allowed to wrestle Rohit Raju for the X Division title. However, Manic is not TJP on paper, but in physicality, he actually is. He is TJP with a sleeveless hoodie and a mask on, and he wrestles like he's a superhero, complete with landing in the Spider-Man pose every time he lands, which is a cool trick to do as a pro wrestler. Again, shenanigans in the midst. But here we go. Rohit and TJ have a great little match. Early submission moves back and forth, and then it gets better. And like I said, when he lands that Spider-Man pose after doing some kind of flip, or he hits a blind cutter on him that's real nice, the action comes quickly. TJP misses a setup. Rohit changes this into a flatliner, into a crossface. Your finish in a fine little X Division match comes when at first TJ Manic almost hits the ref but doesn't, and then Rohit goes for Manic, almost hits the ref, pauses, stops, doesn't, turns into a pinning predicament because he paused, which costs him the title. Rohit is livid. He knows he's been had. He knows Scott D'Amore realizes exactly who Manic is. He knows that beating TJP for the title and winning that stip did him absolutely no good, because the guy just put on a mask in a tradition as timeless as wrestling itself. Loser leaves town. He comes back with a mask on. That's how this works. And I love it. And also it was good. And I want to say this. Rohit Raju, this time last year, was forgotten. He was in a faction. It wasn't working. He was the guy who got beat in the faction all the time. He's good on a stick. They gave him a stick. They said, go to work. He did well enough that he managed to win a title through by hook and by crook. And then he had a fantastic little title run where he was entertaining. He feuded with the GM. He wrestled and lost to multiple people in non-title matches. But he did. He got himself into scenarios where it's four or five of us wrestling. I can figure it out as long as I kind of stay away from the fray. It worked for him. And I hope this isn't the last we see of him being in good programs, because I love the way he works. He's not quite the wrestler a TJP is, or a Rich Swann is, or a Chris Bay is, but he is a very good wrestler, can do everything, and can tell a story in the ring and out of the ring. So I was surprised at that, because I didn't know he could do all that until this year. Now we get a quick interview with Moose. And he put away Willie Mack to make sure he would not have to wrestle tonight. Put him on the shelf. And he is going to unify the TNA title, no matter who wins it tonight, with the Impact World title at some point. And that some point is coming very soon. Taya is with Rosemary versus Deanna Purrazzo, the Virtuoso with Kimberly. This is a good little women's match. I've seen both of these two do better, but I did enjoy this match between the two. The finish comes in strong. Rosemary hitting a sling blade, hits a running splash into the corner, fall away slam. We get a butterfly suplex. We get a quick two or a near fall. Deanna locks in a Fujiwara armbar, which winds up getting countered into a red wedding for a near fall. And then Kimber pulls the ref out of the ring. Taya chases. The distraction causes Deanna to hit Rosemary with a pump kick and then goes into the Cosa Nostra for the pin and the win. And then we get Deanna Purrazzo and Kimberly trying to do what they've been trying to do, which is beat people up after their matches. And that is when Taya gets both of them out of the ring. And we're going into a Taya Valkyrie program with Deanna Purrazzo. And that is going to be gold, because Taya is the goods, and she will. This is going to be great. Again, pretty good match, telling a story and getting us into the next segment of the next couple of weeks of shows. Back to the bus, and we have a quick little reunion of the Bullet Club, because we have Carl Anderson, Kenny Omega, and Don Callis sitting there, and they are discussing Carl drinking 15 beers as Kenny drinks coffee back in the old big boy. Then Kenny says, hurry up, finish this thing off, get back here before the bar closes, which the bar doesn't obviously never closes because it's their bus. But I'm sorry, I believe Don said that, because I don't think Kenny drinks anything other than like milk. So Kenny would not have said that, but I think Don says that. And Carl says, well, I got a match, guys. I got to get going. And he's like, well, you can take care of him in a hurry, can't you? And Carl's like, well, you know, he's pretty good. And they go, well, I remember in the G1 final in 2012, when you had match of the year with Okada, that machine gun would have took care of this guy in a second. And Anderson says, what are you guys, having some kind of roast on me right here? And he says, I'm not trying to have a roast on you. Are you or are you not Machine Gun Anderson? Because if you're Machine Gun Anderson, you'll take care of this guy and get back here. And he's pumped now, and he heads to the ring, and we are going to get a Machine Gun Anderson match with Ethan, All Ego, Ethan Page. Now, when they give you the run through, I thought it was interesting. It hit me like a ton of bricks that I didn't figure it out. They had been talking about the New Japan connection that they had with AJ Styles backstage for the whole time they've been back. They keep telling these stories of New Japan. They keep talking about a phenomenal one. They never really call AJ's name out. They do actually say AJ, they do put AJ's name up on the board when Ethan Page winds up in a match with a phenomenal one that Carl Anderson appointed, which really wound up being Hornswoggle, but they used AJ's old TNA music and AJ's old TNA logo. And to me, I just could not believe that I didn't put two and two together that they were going to bring a Bullet Club guy into Impact, even if not like to wrestle, but just to be around. And I couldn't put those two together even after they brought Kenny in. I just, how dumb am I, right? Because you substitute AJ for Kenny, which is kind of, isn't that the route they went? It went Finn to AJ to Kenny?
Yes, I do. Yes, it did go from Finn to AJ and then to Kenny, which, flawless victory. 100% kill rate.
Right, you know? Right. You went from best in the world to best in the world to best bout machine.
Which was best in the world.
Right, you're the best bout machine, you're the best in the world. So they managed to pull that off three times in a row, which doesn't happen a whole lot in the world of wrestling.
I think it's only happened once.
And right now, Jay's probably the head, and he's pretty dang good, too.
I would say Jay may be the head. I don't know. It's tough to imagine that there is a head of the Bullet Club right now.
That isn't G.O.D.?
Well, because Jay White is so kind of fairly new.
Right.
You know, it's kind of tough to say.
Yep. Okay, now here we get into this match. And now this pay-per-view is picking up, and I loved this match. It was very old school. Thank you very much, Ray, for hopping in there and helping me out on that, buddy. Okay, this was very old school. Ethan Page is working a body part. He's working the lower back. It's slowly paced, but physical. It's wrestled in spurts by Carl Anderson versus Ethan holding him down, hitting him in the back, putting him in scenarios where he can elbow him in the kidneys, backbreakers. When that way, when Carl winds up, like Carl gets him in a beautiful, he's got a fantastic double A spine buster. And he hits him with it, and he can't go for the pin because he's got to hold his back. There's another move he hits in there somewhere. He hits a cutter. Boom. He lands. He can't go for the pin because the work on the back has worked. Carl takes all the effort that they can give him. The match goes somewhere around. We have two guys that primarily focus recently on tag team wrestling, giving us a long, well-paced, physical match where they tell a story. Carl Anderson has just been challenged to bring back the guy he used to be. Ethan Page, behind the scenes, is probably leaving the company. We're in the act of breaking up the North, and if Ethan's leaving the company, he's probably wanting to be a solo star. So in a lot of ways, he's showing whoever his next boss is, hey, I can do this as well. And he did a great job of that here. Now, he does wind up losing when Carl hits a second rope cutter and then hits the gun stun for the win. Now, post-match, we have the remains of the North imploding. This once great tag team, anointed as the greatest tag team in the history of the company, even though there's plenty of arguments that they're not, but they were a great tag team. One of my favorites on the planet this year. They can't get along. Alexander takes off his North jacket, walks away from Page as Page is pleading and almost crying that he has a plan where they'll get to challenge for the titles again. They're going to win. Everything will be fine. He's left alone, screaming at the announce team, Josh Matthews and his wife, Madison Rain, who were excellent all night, that this can work. Not screaming, whining, that I have a plan. Believe me, it's all going to work out. Blinking the tears away from his eyes. And then we're going to move into an Impact title match. Now, during this, Madison points out that we've had a Bullet Club reunion when these two guys, Anderson and Kenny, get together backstage. Now, spoilers, Kenny does not interfere in any of this. But I did think that was a neat moment, and I do like the idea of openly running a Bullet Club thread through all of these shows. And that really opens it up to, hey, are we going to get some form of a, I almost said New World Order, but obviously not a New World Order, but a Bullet Club World Order in which we rerun some form of this faction through everything. Because, of course, the Bucks were involved in all of that, and it would be very interesting. But I'll digress, because we have something we should pay attention to, which is a banger championship match. Chris Bey and Rich Swann come out, and it starts out slow. They pace themselves very much. They do tell the story that Rich Swann was a Baltimore independent wrestling legend, and that Chris Bey is from right down the road. He's from Virginia, and he always has felt like he's a little bit in Rich Swann's shadow. He grew up being told all these wonderful stories of what Swann was able to do in all these small venues in what they call the DMV, the DC, Maryland, Virginia triangle wrestling area. Now, we get a fantastic match here. Swann really, it's not the blur match you would think it was going to be when I give you these two names. They do wrestle similar to the last match in suddenness, but obviously they're way more sudden than Carl Anderson is. These two guys are freakish athletes. We get the Swann Rolling Thunder. Knee gets countered with a knee by Bey, which turns into a 619 and a rolling neck breaker. He does some form of a twirling uppercut to the back that I don't think I've ever seen anybody else do. Chris Bey does. He gets Swann outside of the ring, slings him into the guardrails. He gets him into the ring. He has two strong throws into the turnbuckles. As Swann is collapsed in the corner, he does the push-up spot, talking to him. Then he slows it down again after there's a little bit of a counter with an abdominal stretch, the obvious hip toss out of it by Swann, and then we get the two hezzy kicks, Bey elbow. They start going back and forth. Swann gets a rolling clothesline. Swann gets the jabs in, the floating over kicks. Spinning forearms, leaping Conradas, the works, right? They break it all out. They fight into a test of will thing where we do the punches to the faces, and Swann is bouncing off the rope and coming back a la Moxley Ambrose style, and then they trade kicks to the head, about four of them, two apiece. They both land on the ground and they lay there for a second. They catch their breath. Again, they give us action, they give us action, they give us action, they give us time to compartmentalize all that we just saw, which is really well done here. Then as Bey's got him on the ropes again, he hits what he calls the Rockabye Bey, which is a leaping small package. I'm a big fan of the leaping small package. It gets a two count. Bey is again talking trash. He goes for the Art of Finesse. His ego got the best of him right here. He hits the leaping cutter, but Rich Swann, who knows it coming, does the handspring out of the leaping cutter, which was just perfect. Boom. Hezzy kick, Phoenix splash. Rich Swann wins. Fantastic match. The pay-per-view was paced oddly slow for this company from start to finish, but I think that may have been by design to show a little bit of difference between what they do and what some other companies do. Also, some of the guys you had involved couldn't wrestle any other way, right? Rhino's not going to wrestle any other way. EY wrestles a formula, and it's a good formula. Carl Anderson, Ethan Page, I thought, planned out a long match and figured out what they had to do correctly. I thought these two guys did a fantastic job of showcasing what one another could do and what this company can do with their top tier talent in these situations. They gave you plot lines, they gave you some pretty good matches, and then they gave you a fantastic match, all on a network that they hope you have anyway on the special event. Now, after the match, Moose comes down and we're all expecting the beatdown. Moose gets into the ring. He picks up Swan's title. Swann is beat down. He's ready to get whooped. There's nothing he can do about it. If Moose wants to beat him up, Moose chooses not to. He hands him his title, and he turns around and he walks away. As Josh Matthews says at the end of the show, He was letting him know, I can take that anytime I want. I don't have to do it to you when you're hurt. Perfect way to end the show. Cut to credits. It was a good little night of wrestling, if not a great night of wrestling, but it was a very, very good main event. And we are getting an interesting storyline in the women's division, an interesting storyline that is filtering through all of wrestling with whatever Kenny Omega and Don Callis are up to. And we're getting other interesting storylines along the way here. So, good night for Impact Wrestling. I hope you enjoyed our talk. Have a great day.
You
copyright 2020.
Go home.
Go home, Heat. Go home.